everybody, and welcome to another episode of Chai Talk with Wajahat Ali for the Left Hook Substack, where I invite a subject matter expert who is much smarter than me to tackle one big question in 30 minutes or less. And today we have, all the way from Lebanon, we have the amazing reporter, analyst, author Kim Gattas. She is an Atlantic contributing writer, or a contributing editor for FT, the author of the fantastic book that I recommend everyone read, and I will link to it, Black Wave. If you really want to understand the modern Middle East, which was a top book for the New York Times in 2020, and she has been providing some invaluable insight into what's happening right now in Lebanon. And the big question I want to ask you, Kim, and I appreciate your time. I know how stressful it is. I know how exhausted you might be. I know how everyone wants your time. Is, as this war, Israel's war, is expanding now to the West Bank, to Syria, to Houthis in Yemen, and especially in Lebanon, the question I have for you is, how will Israel's expanding war fuel a new cycle of extremism and terrorism? And that, of course, is my, there's an assumption in that question. If you disagree with me, let me know. But before we actually answer that question, I do want to ask you, how are you? How is your family?
Waj, it's great to be with you. I'm fine. I live in Beirut. I live very close to the southern suburbs, which have been pounded quite relentlessly over the last couple of weeks by Israeli airstrikes, starting with that now famous strike that killed the leader of Hezbollah, Hassan Nasrallah. Of course, southern Lebanon is also being pounded quite heavily. A couple of villages have already been razed to the ground, as far as we can tell from images. And yesterday evening, there was another strike, not to my south, but to my east, which was a little bit unexpected in a neighborhood where we did not expect that there would be any strikes, because we feel quite safe in my neighborhood. There's no Hezbollah presence here. I don't like to use the word strongholds, but the southern suburbs are a bastion of support for Hezbollah. There is a diversity of opinions there as well. There is a diversity of people, but it is a bastion of support, and that's what's been pounded mostly. But yesterday, the Israelis struck in three different locations, not in the southern suburbs, but in Beirut proper. And that is the result of people leaving the southern suburbs to flee to safety elsewhere, including members of Hezbollah, including those high up guys who are still alive, whom Israel then tracks to wherever they are. And one of them was targeted in that strike yesterday, in a neighborhood where he had, I guess, gone to find refuge. So the Lebanese feel very much stuck between Israel on the one hand and Hezbollah on the other, with neither one of them caring about the civilians that they're endangering. But how am I? I am, you know, in disbelief that, I don't mind revealing my age, at the age of 47, this is the umpteenth war that I'm going through. I've already been through Israeli war with Israel, invasion, etc. And it's just, you know, it makes you ponder your life choices. You know, what am I still doing here? Why don't I live, you know, on a winery somewhere in New Zealand or something? But I also realize I'm very privileged. I have a roof over my head. I have options if I want to leave Beirut. I have options if I want to leave Lebanon. And I have the power of my word and my voice, which enables me to speak to people like you or give interviews to the international media or, you know, be published, etc. And that is what, you know, keeps me going. But there is, you know, safety has become a very relative word because we just don't know, you know, where the next target might be. And you know, your nerves start to fray a little bit. I'm fairly zen. I'm mostly, again, I have to emphasize, I'm speaking from a very privileged position. I am mostly frustrated because I haven't been able to work properly over the last 2 weeks, because it's very loud in Beirut. So I took a few days off I went to the north to try to, get some sleep there. And then you come back home and you have to unpack your suitcase and then figure out what you have to do. And sort of you just feel like war is closing in. And you and your listeners might be interested in knowing that I've been working on a book for the last 2 years, my next book. And it is actually somehow by some, bizarre coincidence, it is the genesis of what we're seeing continue unfold today. I'm looking back at the 1980s, the Israeli invasion of 1982, the departure of the Palestinian Liberation Organization and the rise of Hezbollah, and looking at the arc of that trajectory over, the last 40, 42 years. And, here we are.
Here we are, unfortunately, and that book needs to come out yesterday, but it can't because you are stuck in the middle of a war, and so many people like you who have no fidelity or allegiance to Hezbollah or extremist groups or just people trying to live their lives cannot because they're stuck. And just some numbers, Kim, for people who don't know, this was yesterday, last night, CNN said up to 2.5 million people need, quote, urgent humanitarian food assistance in Lebanon as Israel's war with Hezbollah rages in the country, according to the United States Agency for International Development. Israel has pummeled Lebanon with an unprecedented airstrike campaign, killing more than 1,500 people, injuring more than 8,000, and displacing more than 1 million people, according to the Lebanese Health Ministry. And that's in less than
That's
one.
a quarter of the population. A quarter of the population that has had to flee southern Lebanon, flee the southern suburbs, and just find refuge somewhere. So the state of the city, even Beirut, is, a mess because people are looking for a roof, people are looking for food. We have a country without a president, without a cabinet, barely functioning institutions because we've been through 4 years of economic crisis, financial crisis, constitutional crisis. And it's just too much for this country to bear. So we're already host to 1 million Syrian refugees over the last 10 years. And now the city and its suburbs, northern suburbs and eastern suburbs and further up north, are having to host 1 million internally displaced Lebanese. And that's a huge weight on the government's capacities, whatever it has. Aid has been flowing in, and there is an incredible amount of solidarity from people, civil society, humanitarian organizations. Friends donating money, buying mattresses, providing their homes for shelter, cooking meals. This is how this country survives. But that's not a recipe for long-term stability.
But a lot of people haven't survived, and I want to stress real quick. You talk about how this has happened before. People are exhausted. In 82, Israel invaded Lebanon to weaken and destroy PLO. They say up to 15 to 20,000 people, mostly civilians, were killed. Ronald Reagan
Killed,
was so
correct.
horrified by the images that he saw, he picked up the phone and told the then prime minister, "Knock it off." Israel
He said
invaded.
specifically, "I have a Holocaust on my TV screen."
He used the word
And
Holocaust.
Menachem Begin said, "I think I know what a Holocaust is."
And then Reagan said, "Knock it off." And 20 minutes later, Begin called back and said, "Fine." Lebanon was occupied by Israel until 2000. There was
So
that Southern
Southern
Lebanon
Lebanon
was,
was occupied.
and then there was the 2006, battle, war, conflict between Israel and Hezbollah, which was essentially a stalemate, but left again a disproportionate number of people killed in Lebanon, civilians killed, and so now you have the situation appear again. And on October 8th, Netanyahu appealed to the people of Lebanon, and I want to quote him. He addressed the people of Lebanon using English and said, quote, "You have an opportunity to save Lebanon before it falls into the abyss of a long war that will lead to destruction and suffering like we see in Gaza," end quote. Your response?
Well, so at least he admits that, there is suffering and destruction in Gaza, and that, the Israeli military campaign caused that. Look, the Lebanese have very mixed feelings. People are really very torn. I would say that there's a solid majority of Lebanese that resents, hates, rejects Hezbollah. But being liberated by Israel is not on anybody's mind here. So you have a lot of people saying, we're glad that they're being, that Hezbollah's being knocked down to size or, clobbered, but we wish it weren't happening this way because now we're also suffering, right? But and that's where this is so different from the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, because Hezbollah in Lebanon has become a very powerful political player that has a chokehold on the Lebanese on Lebanese politics, that has a veto power on who gets elected president, that is armed to the teeth and has used its weapons against the Lebanese on the streets of Beirut in 2008, but also stands accused of having killed its political opponents, including the former Lebanese prime minister and many intellectuals and journalists, including friends of mine, over the last 20 years or so since 2005. And Hezbollah was involved in the war in Syria on the side of Bashar al-Assad. So it has, frankly, it has more Arab blood on its hands than Israeli blood. And I think that that's where a lot of people in Lebanon are suddenly thinking, wait, we thought you were the resistance against Israel. What have you been doing all these years? And what is happening now? We're on the street. We've got no food. We've got no shelter. You said you would defend the country. You would defend us, especially the Shia community. And you failed. Now, again, going back to the message from Netanyahu, that was a very dangerous message. I don't think anybody in Lebanon is listening. Like I said, people may really be disappointed by Hezbollah, but nobody here is going to ride an Israeli military tank to victory against anyone else in Lebanon, right? That is not happening. This is not 1982, where the Israelis allied themselves with a right-wing Christian militia at the time, and thought at the time also that they could redraw the map of the Middle East. And we're hearing that same kind of language again today. We're going to redraw the map of the Middle East. You know what? It doesn't end well when the Israelis try to redraw the map of the Middle East, especially not with military force. So the message in Beirut, the message of Netanyahu was kind of dismissed with contempt. We don't need you. We're not listening to you. We don't believe you. Because the previous message was, our enemy is Hezbollah. It's not Lebanon. And the Lebanese are like, well, actually, we've seen what you've done to Gaza, and we don't believe anything you say, especially that we have been waking up in Beirut for the last 11 months or a year to the sound of, to the voice of Israeli officials saying, we're going to turn Lebanon into Gaza. We're going to annihilate it. Lebanon will cease to exist. Just 10 days ago, the Israeli Minister of Education said exactly that. Lebanon is all Hezbollah. It will be annihilated. Lebanon will cease to exist. And, I'm just waiting for Western officials to condemn the minister of a country calling for the annihilation of another country. Where is that condemnation? How is that acceptable? I mean, let's not even talk about what happened to Gaza. But now, because that's a whole episode, and you have covered that, and many people, probably not enough, actually, people have covered it, but not enough. But now we're actually talking about a sovereign country, right? Where you have the official, an Israeli official, Israeli minister saying, we will. It will, Lebanon will cease to exist. And I just want to know, are these statements not being translated into English? Are we only hearing them here in Lebanon because they get translated into Arabic from Hebrew and picked up by the local media? Why is it acceptable for Israeli officials to call for the annihilation of another country? So,
We have an
yeah,
election.
long.
Kim, we have an election in 4 weeks. Can't touch this. This is a political bomb. Why touch it? Why actually exert our influence like Reagan did, like Eisenhower did in the past? Pick up the
Because
phone
Democrats
and stop
Democrats
it.
look at this differently. There is an election coming up, but there is an argument to be made for the fact that all-out war in the Middle East is not going to help Kamala Harris's chances.
No. And
So.
maybe she'll listen to you. I believe the expanding war, and this is the premise of the question today, will not bring about peace, will not bring about security, will not help Israel, will not help Kamala Harris. We've seen this story before. I'm so glad you're writing this book. Is that in 82, when they went to take out PLO, there was no Hezbollah at that time. It was the attack and invasion and occupation of southern Lebanon by Israel that birthed, if you will, Hezbollah. So this time around, when Benjamin Netanyahu knows he has 5 weeks, now he has a month of carte blanche because no one's going to touch it, even though they should. And he has expanded the war to the West Bank. He's now bombing Syria. You know, there's attacks with Houthis in Yemen, and now it's all-out war invasion in Lebanon. And like you mentioned, some of the genocidal members of his cabinet, they want to redraw the map, and they have some ambition in Lebanon. What makes them think, Kim, or what makes you think that this will turn out any different? That this will bring about security, that this incursion, this assault, this time it'll work. And this time there will be peace in the Middle East. And by eliminating Hezbollah and this type of rampage and destruction in Gaza and Lebanon, you know, which Biden has blessed, let's be honest about it. He could have stopped it, but he hasn't. This will bring about any different result than what we have seen over the past 40 years. What am I missing?
You know, I can't speak for what the Israelis are thinking or why they think this is going to work this time. I can just tell you that it's not. Some factors are a little bit different from 1982. We don't have a cunning Hafez al-Assad sitting in Damascus. We have a rather bloodthirsty but also cowardly Bashar al-Assad sitting in Damascus, who's done, a rather not the right way to phrase it, but a rather good quote unquote job at killing his people for 10 years. But who doesn't really want to be involved in a war against Israel? So he's really frankly missing in action. But he's not as cunning as his father was at the time. As you see, in 1982, when Israel invaded, it was a tactical success in the sense that they kicked out the PLO. But long term, it was a strategic catastrophe because, as you said, it helped bring about the rise of Hezbollah. But specifically, it helped bring Iran to the Mediterranean. Because 2 days after the Israeli invasion, the Iranians sent a plane load of guys to come and fight in Lebanon. And Bashar, Hafez al-Assad at the time wasn't too keen on that because he'd been clobbered already by the Israelis and he didn't want to get into a full-on fight. And the Iranians were counting on Hafez al-Assad to provide the jets, the tanks, the field hospitals. And the Syrians said, "We don't think so." And so instead of launching into a full-on war against Israel from Lebanon, the Iranians chose to start something like Hezbollah. But there was a moment after the Israeli invasion where it did look as though the Israelis might have succeeded. And they were working on pushing through a peace deal between Israel and Lebanon that the US was trying to shepherd. But two things went terribly wrong. The newly elected president of Lebanon, Christian, and ally of the Israelis was assassinated, most probably on orders of the Syrians, who did not want to see this new Middle East be born. And second, the Syrians had given their promise to George Shultz at the time that they would withdraw from Lebanon if the Israelis withdrew as well, because the Syrians were positioned in Lebanon as well at the time. But it took so long for American diplomacy to get this on track that by the time they were ready to say to the Syrians, "Okay, it's you withdraw, the Israelis withdraw," the Syrians had changed their mind. They said, "No, actually, we're not, because we've got new weapons from the Soviets, and we're ready to launch this anti-American, axis push against you with the Iran." I mean, they didn't say it like that to the Americans, but they said, "No, we're not withdrawing," because what they were doing was getting together with the Iranians to see how they could bloody the Americans in Lebanon. with some support from the Soviets, who wanted absolutely to make sure that America's plans in the Middle East with the Marines, with the peace agreement, that that would fail. And they said very clearly to Lebanon's next president, who was elected after the one who was assassinated, that they would make sure the Americans would not leave intact from Lebanon. And it's just incredible to see some of those same forces at play today
Yeah, it's
with,
like
you know,
Groundhog's Day.
Putin and the Iranians. Yeah, it's the same. But so, sorry, long answer to your question. Is it going to be suddenly different today? Are the Israelis going to succeed? I shudder at the idea that they might, because you cannot birth a region, a new type of region under, you know, under the gun like this. It just doesn't work. It might not unfold exactly like it did in 1982, but you know, trying again and again the same thing, right? As you say, the definition of insanity, trying the same thing and again and again and expecting a different result. I just don't see it happen. But it is apparently also quite human to keep trying and expect a different result. I mean, it's not just the Israelis. I mean, you know, various different people in history have tried this.
But the thing that no one has tried is ending an occupation, giving people freedom, giving
Yes,
people the right to self-determination.
in this case, what gets forgotten in the conversation again and again, because we're all busy discussing the Israeli military campaign, is that the crux of this remains decades-long unjust occupation of the Palestinian people. And unless that is addressed, there is no long-term stability to be found in this region, because there will always be somebody fighting against occupation, because that's human as well to resist occupation. And there will always also be somebody using that to their advantage, as the Iranians have done and as Hezbollah have done, to, you know, advance their own agenda. But whether it is destroying Hezbollah or destroying Hamas, unless you put forward a better idea and diplomacy, these groups cannot be destroyed. They can be diminished, decapitated, put on the back foot, etc., etc. But Hezbollah is also a political party in Lebanon. They have social services, hospitals, they're in parliament. You know, you cannot just destroy them.
My final quick question, because I know, Kim, you have to leave, and I know, I really appreciate you taking the time, especially with what's been happening, is if you could talk directly to the Biden administration, because he still has power and he'll still be in power for a few months, and give him advice on what he should do. What would that advice be? Because right now, the calculation here is, well, green light to Bibi for the next month. Maybe they can weaken Iran, weaken Hezbollah, weaken Hamas. And we won't touch it for a month, and Kamala will win. And when she wins, then she can then rein in Bibi. We have a month. That seems to be the strategy right now. But if you were to offer him advice, what would it be?
I want to point out something, Waj, which is that other countries in the region are also looking to see Israel weaken Hezbollah and Iran.
Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia, the UAE, you know, even Egypt, I would think. I mean, so again, people are stuck between two very contradictory emotions. You know, you know, I'm sure the Saudis are thinking we'd like the Israelis to, you know, cut Hezbollah to size, but we're also worried because I'm sure the Iranians are telling them this goes too far. If the Israelis are going to hit Iran, you know, you might find some missiles heading your way as well. And I think that's a terribly complex set of factors to deal with. But I think the Biden administration should, first of all, push back very strongly, as they have, to be fair, this week, against statements like the one by Netanyahu saying we will turn Lebanon into Gaza. The White House and the State Department came out the next day and they said We will not accept Lebanon being turned into Gaza. Why it was acceptable to turn Gaza into rubble, that again sort of, boggles the mind. But let's at least, not have a repeat of that. So it was good to hear them push back against that. It was good to hear them push back against Bibi trying to butt into Lebanese. It was good to hear them butt in against, sorry, it was good to hear them push back against Netanyahu butting into Lebanese politics. Leave the Lebanese politics to the Lebanese. We make a mess of it, but it's our mess. We don't want anyone's, any Israeli involvement here. I think the Biden administration needs to be acutely aware that communal tensions are going to start rising very quickly in Lebanon because people are just overloaded. You have refugees sleeping on the streets. You have sectarian tensions starting a little bit. I'm not predicting a civil war. I'm just predicting, just sort of friction, constant friction. People are, like I said, sleeping on the floor, not enough resources. Everybody's crammed into the same space. There is a community, the Shia community, that is fearful, that is afraid, that feels that it's been robbed of a great leader for many of them, not all of them, not all the Shias. Again, I don't want to generalize, not all of them support Nasrallah, but a lot of them are fearful of what is their fate when they feel now, unprotected, and the Lebanese state has never been there to protect anyone. And so it's time. It was time yesterday and the day before, but it is time now to start to press on the Israelis that they need to de-escalate very quickly. They've settled their scores. Hezbollah's on the back foot. They've decapitated the leadership. They're going to start getting bogged down in southern Lebanon because you know what Hezbollah is very good at? Guerrilla warfare, right? And we're already seeing the damage and the casualties that they're inflicting on the Israelis. And that is going to increase their capital again amongst parts of the population in Lebanon. So push back against, statements like the one from Netanyahu. Keep them far away from Lebanese politics. Assist, regional countries to try to shepherd or cooperate with France and regional countries, like they did when they tried to put forward a peace, a truce, a 21-day truce before all this blew up. And to the extent possible, understand that I think a generalized chaos in Lebanon and further military action by Israel in the region, in my opinion, my humble opinion, sitting in Beirut, is not going to do Kamala Harris any favors. So for the sake of the civilians who are dying and for your own, electoral calculus, it's time to tell the Israelis in no uncertain terms, it's time to de-escalate. And the reason why I say de-escalate, not cease fire, because I know how diplomacy works. We've seen this in 2006 in Lebanon. The Americans will not use the word cease fire until the Israelis say we're ready for the cease fire. Then the Americans will call it, and then they don't need to veto a resolution at the UN. Call me cynical, but that's just how it works.
And that's because you have seen this story before. And we have seen the
Unfortunately.
story for 40 years, and let's hope there's a new chapter with a new story. Kim, thank you so much for your time. You're doing fantastic work. I wish you and your family safety. As we leave, I always give an opportunity for my guests to shamelessly promote themselves. In addition to my shameless promotion, how can people support you? How can people follow you? Please let them know.
I'm on Twitter at Kim Ghattas. I tweet a bit. I don't post on social media very much anymore. I sort of, sobered up on that. I find it personally just it eats too much of my time. Please buy my book. It's called Black Wave. And keep an eye out for the next one, which will take still a little bit of time. And, at this rate, I don't know when I'll finish writing it, but it's coming. I'm
The
working
world
on
needs
it.
it, Kim. Inshallah, we can. Inshallah, you have some safety
I
and peace of mind to read it and write it.
personally, selfishly need a ceasefire so I can finish this book. And we all need a ceasefire.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, everyone, for watching another episode of Chai Talk with Wajahat Lee for the Left Hook Substack. And as always, stay safe and vote.